This is the Talking Tigers Podcast, presented by the Alabama Department of Public Health. Don't wait. Vaccinate. Protect yourself and others by staying current on all vaccines, including respiratory virus vaccines. Visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM to learn more. Here's the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, with this week's Talking Tigers Podcast.
They met while he played JUCO baseball at Chattahoochee Valley. She was dating one of his teammates. Tim and Kim Hudson eventually came to Auburn for school. He was the National and SEC Player of the Year in 1997 on the Tigers College World Series team. She was his tutor. Tim played for Oakland, Atlanta, and won a World Series with San Francisco. While they were in Atlanta, the Hudson Family Foundation was formed. This week, children from Lee County will gather at Neville Arena for the Legends Ceremony. Each of over 1,200 children's families will receive a gift certificate for a Thanksgiving meal. This is just a small part of what the Hudson Family Foundation does in the Auburn, Opelika, and Lee County communities. Kim and Tim Hudson tell their Auburn stories in this Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health. Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast. Very glad to have with us both Kim and Tim Hudson with the Hudson Family Foundation, Auburn graduates. We have a lot to talk about, and especially at this time of the year. Glad to have both of you with us today. War Eagle.
War Eagle. War Eagle. Thanks for having us.
Let's start with the Hudson Family Foundation. When did this begin? What was the impetus for the Hudson Family Foundation,
Kim? Believe it or not, this is year 15.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But Tim and I, it really started out of needs that we saw. It was a super busy time in our lives. Tim had just had Tommy John surgery in 2008. We had three little kids. And I was on the board of Make-A-Wish, Georgia and Alabama, doing a lot with Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. Anytime we would do charity work with these other organizations, we just kept seeing the same thing over and over, meaning a child was sick, and because of that, a family was in financial distress. They thought that they had good insurance. Turns out they didn't. Somebody's had to quit their job to be in the hospital. Just all these factors. And we just kept seeing it over and over. And I feel like God just was showing us, just opening this door of, I need to show you this need, and you need to fill it. And so we just had this feeling like I can't do this anymore without having an answer for people when they say, you know, we just need a little money to get our utilities, you know, back caught up and things. And so I told Tim, I go, I think it's just time for us to start our own. I don't want to quit doing what we're doing, but I want to be able to be intentional and make these decisions right now and have a way to help these families. And so Tim's very agreeable for the most part. He doesn't really tell me no very much. He said, you know, well, okay. And so I called our agent. We've had the same agent for years and years and years. And he is great. He's very wise, from Southern California. And I told him just that. And he said, well, Kim, let me tell you why this is not a good idea. And Tim and I were both on a landline phone, and his face was like, oh gosh, this is not gonna make
it. Because I knew that it was happening, whether he was on board or not.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, we'd seen so many stressors going on with families. I'm like, man, this is something we have to do.
Yeah. You got to remember the financial landscape in 2008 and 2009 was, you know,
yeah, it was a
not
pretty
good.
Dire situation financially in the world at that time.
So Paul said, you know, look, Tim may never pitch again. He just had Tommy John surgery. Never know how that's going to go. You have three young kids that you're responsible for. You have charitable responsibilities that you've committed to. And he was right. I mean, he said that the economy's terrible. People are having problems paying their bills. How are they going to give you discretion? There's no discretionary money to be given for this. And I said, okay, that's fair. And I appreciate that. And give me a week, and I'm going to pray about it. And I'm going to circle back with you in a week. And I barely made it 24 hours. And I was like, I can't not do it. Like, I just can't not do it. So I called him back, and I think he kind of knew too. And he said, and he was our first donation. He sent me a check for $500. So he knew.
Big spender.
Now, hey, listen, they support at a high tier every year.
Non-surgery.
That's right. He was being careful too.
I'm thinking, okay, I really need to hammer down on this rehab. I've got to keep pitching for a while.
But it was always family. Centered,
it was, and the impetus really was individual grants, meaning when we meet a Make-A-Wish family at Turner Field, and we get to talking to them, and they tell us, we only have one car now because this one had to go in the shop, and we just don't have the money to get it out, then I can say, okay, talk to me about that. What, give me the invoice for that. What, how can we help you get from point A to point B, whether it be mortgage or rent payments, utility bills, medical bills, prescriptions? I mean, no kidding, people would say, well, you know, my daughter has these prescriptions due, and sometimes we have to decide whether to get those filled or pay our power bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not okay. So that creating our own organization allowed us to be able to fulfill real tangible needs that were in front of us. Yeah. And so, yes, that's how it started, is so we could be able to do that. And then being an attorney, I knew it had to look favorable to the IRS. So we created other programs that I kind of was thinking, well, these may stick, they may not. I just want to be able to plug in with these individual families when we see these needs. And turns out our scholarship program is so rewarding and great. It's been wonderful. We do one-time $3,000 scholarships every year to over 20 high schools and wheelchair basketball here and just other groups as they, you know, as they cross our paths. And then the individual grant program, our Legends program, which you're always a part of, our Christmas, you know, our Santa Christmas program. And so we're always evaluating to make sure what we're doing is still relevant and needed. And then also, is there something that we need to be doing that we're not? Like, is there anything we need to explore that's different? So we just want to make a difference. Yeah. We don't do it because we don't have anything to do.
You know, and a lot of it was, I mean, in the beginning stages of it, you know, we would, you know, like Kim said, you know, we were part of the Make-A-Wish Foundation and Children's Health Care of Atlanta, and we were coming across all these families. And you know, I think the one thing that kind of spurred this whole thing was, you know, just seeing these families dealing with their sick child and all the stresses and emotions that go on with that. And then on top of it, you know, you start peeling the onion back a little bit and you see, and you know, all the added stressors that you have with bills and travel and just all these things that, and for me, us as parents, it was like, man, you know, they just need to concentrate on their child and getting their child feeling better and getting them well. You know, how can we come in and help in that other area that they shouldn't be dealing with at this time, right, you know, for a while?
I'm going to put a pin in the Hudson Family Foundation. I want to come back and we're going to talk about the work that is being done at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. I want to do that in just a bit. But kind of tell your Auburn story today as well. I know Tim's because I was here calling Tim's career. And I knew you a little because you were always at the games and we've all interacted in different levels ever since then. Tim, for you, and we were at lunch the other day, and you said something, and I was astounded by this.
Oh, I want to hear this.
It's not bad. But you grew up, I mean, you grew up nearby. You grew up in Salem,
yeah,
Phoenix City, Columbus.
Yeah.
You had never been to the Auburn campus until you were recruited by
Auburn
baseball.
He just told somebody that upstairs when we were coming out.
That just still astounds me.
Right? You know, it was, I mean, where I grew up, you know, we had a four-way stop sign town. You know, Auburn and Opelika might as well have been Atlanta to us. You know, Phoenix City was close. Columbus was close. Everything that we had done was in Columbus and Phoenix City. You'd never been this way. And, of course, you know, my family, we were your typical Alabama football Roll Tide fans. I mean, I was, you know, that was back when I was, you know, such a sinner in my life, you know, very steered the wrong way in life, you know, and then finally
wayward.
Yeah, very wayward. But you know, I started getting recruited by some schools, and Auburn was one of the first big schools that recruited me out of junior college, and I came over to campus and I'd never been here. Loved it. Fell in love with Coach Baird, the coaches, Coach Slater, Coach Renfro. My mom and dad came over. They loved it. I mean, my parents transitioned over to Auburn pretty easily. My brothers, not so much. They're still very wayward.
Well, but it's always a mission field.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, I'm still working on it. Every day's a work for them. But yeah, you know, I'd never been here, and it's crazy because I grew up 30 miles from here.
Right.
You know, just right, couple country roads and couple turns, and there, you know, you're here. But yeah, it was. But I think, you know, back then there was. There was a lot of country families and people that lived in the rural areas that, you know, you just if your family wasn't Auburn fans and didn't graduate from Auburn, you probably never came over this way. Mm. You know, we were one of those typical Alabama football fans, you know, and thank God I saw the light.
All right, Kim, you grew up considerably further away from Auburn, right?
I did. Yeah. I did. I grew up in Indiana, and until probably 5 years ago or so, I was kind of embarrassed to explain how I got here, but now I look back on it, and I'm proud to tell it because it's just, it's such a testament to how God just weaves all things together. Yeah. This is a crazy story. So I went to Purdue for 2 years. My whole side of the family went to Purdue. Everyone just went there. It's just what you did. So that's what I did for 2 years. And I just always had this nagging feeling that I needed to go. Like I didn't think I wanted to stay there. It was a great place to grow up. I grew up on a farm and I loved growing up there, but I knew I didn't want to stay. So after my sophomore year at Purdue, I told my parents, you know, I really would like to maybe go somewhere different. And at the same time, so I've had two boyfriends in my life. First one is, his name's Aaron, and him. Aaron and I were dating all through high school. And this is where it gets weird, is that the high school baseball coach at my high school, Lewis Cass High School in Walton, Indiana, went to Chattahoochee Valley. He's probably in his 40s when I was in high school. He played for B.R. Johnson at CV.
See, I've not heard this story.
Yeah. It's weird. I didn't used to tell it because it made me sound boy crazy kind of, but it wasn't. It was just, this is how God got me here. And so Aaron, he was an athlete. We were just talking about this. In high school, he just played sports. There was really nothing else to do. So Aaron played sports, and he had a chance to come down to CV and play baseball. So he was like, well, if you think you're going to go. So I was like, well, let's look down at some southern schools. And so we started way south. We've always had a vacation, like a one-bedroom condo in Fort Myers, Florida. So my dad loves to saltwater fish. So we went to Miami. We went to Tallahassee. Then we came up and we went to Auburn. Well, my dad fell in love with Auburn. Mm. It's very similar to Purdue, land-grant college, these red brick buildings. My mom wasn't always on board, but...
Engineering schools.
School, absolutely. Yeah. My dad's a forester.
He was a forester, so kind of...
Okay.
Yeah, and so after my second year at Purdue, I transferred to Auburn, and Aaron, my boyfriend, came to play baseball at CB. So... He and Tim, yeah, it's crazy. So he and Tim were on the same team. I didn't really know. I mean, I knew of him because he was probably the best player on the team, but we weren't friends or anything. So after that year, we come back, or it's my senior year, okay? So about 2 weeks before we're going to go come back to school, Aaron and I, he says, I don't even think I want to go back. I just would rather stay here. Well, I was like, listen, I'm about to graduate. I'm going to go back and finish. So I come back and he stayed at home, and then he and I had history class together. So yeah. One day after like one of our first classes, Tim's like, hey, aren't you Aaron's girlfriend? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah. You know, we played together last year, and I was like, yeah, he decided not to come back.
It was a big class. It was a class of a couple hundred people.
Yeah, it was like a lecture class.
Yeah.
But then I ended up being his tutor. And so
she took really good notes. So I was like, hey.
Yeah. So we already knew of each other when we had that class together. Right. And then I ended up being his tutor for that class, and things just...
All right, so are you ahead of Tim in school at this point?
Yes, okay. Yes.
Right. Yeah, she was a year ahead of me, and I guess it was 2 years ahead of Aaron, because Aaron was a freshman when I was with him. I was a sophomore, and I think he was only there like maybe two semesters, and then he went back home. But he's a great guy, you know, and I'd met Kim while we were playing together. She came over to Phenix City and went to some games, and I just kind of met. I don't think she liked me very much. Honestly, at the time.
I didn't have an opinion about it.
And she was.
But it's when you think about it, there's so many great college kids at Auburn that chase after God and that are always wanting to talk and things about that. And I always tell them, look, if you prayerfully consider anything, you're way ahead where I was. Like, for God to be able to use my high school baseball coach playing for B.R. Johnson way before I was even... I mean, years and years and years before I was even born, And that's how I got here. It's just crazy.
Well, her town, little town of Walton, Indiana, I mean, I bet you they would send three or four baseball players down to CVCC every year to play. Yeah. They're good baseball.
Little pipeline, then.
Good baseball team.
And that, I think, just a way of, we had a really great baseball coach, a way of giving kids an opportunity to get out of Walton, Indiana, and see what else there is. And a few people stayed.
Yeah.
Are you, at this point, thinking law school?
Yeah. Right before my senior year, I was a psychology and criminology major. I really never... another thing. I don't really know what I was planning to do. And so I kind of got with my advisor right before my senior year. And I just said, I need to know more about what's it look like to be a psychologist, or what does it look like to work in this field or research, or, you know. And so, and she said, some people, you know, use this as a springboard into law school. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. And I started looking into that and applied, and I got in. And so, and I learned a lot. I mean, it's competitive to get in, and now everything's way more competitive. But I had graduated with a 4.0. I was a nerd, honestly. Like, I went to like 2 football games my whole time I was here.
She said the best time to go to the library was on Saturdays. I was like, what?
It's true.
Wrong,
like,
you
had the whole place
to yourself.
She said,
nobody's there. I was like, good Lord.
That's why I love going to sporting events now. I'm like, I can enjoy it. Like, I don't.
I was like, well, I'll be in the football stadium.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So my advisor was the one who, you know, opened that door for me. And so that worked out. And it was great because I was a year ahead of him in school. And so graduated in June of 96. And instead of starting law school in August, I took a whole year and just worked and saved up a little money before I started law school. So I was able to be with him his senior year here at Auburn and go to the World Series and all that.
Which is really
stuff,
when we started. We didn't start dating until
right before
my senior year.
Yeah, I graduated.
Yes, no, we didn't. When we had class together, we didn't start dating right away. We had the same friends group for about a year, I guess.
Yeah.
A little less than a year before we really started each other.
When did you realize that baseball could be an avenue for you to move on and play at Chat Valley or play at Auburn? When did that become a reality for you, Tim?
I mean, I always loved baseball. I always knew that it was something that I was pretty good at. I was just really undersized in high school. And because of that, I didn't really get recruited a whole lot. I graduated high school, I was 145 pounds. Maybe 145 mm-hmm. pounds. So I didn't look like the biggest prospect out there on the field. So, yeah, so it was one of those things where I didn't really had a chance to play anywhere. I tried out for Central Alabama Community College in Alex City. Never heard back from the coach. Didn't have a very good tryout. I didn't start pitching until I was a junior in high school. So that was all kind of new to me. So, you know, that side of my game really wasn't something that people thought that it was really going to be a part of. They thought I was just going to be a hitter and a outfielder or shortstop or whatever. And turns out pitching was what made me who I am. So I had a chance to go to Chattahoochee Valley. B.R. Johnson was the coach there. And thank God, his daughter, I graduated with his daughter. She was in my class at Glenwood.
Right.
And he would come watch her play softball. And, you know, softball and baseball games were played at the same time. So he'd come over and watch baseball. And, you know, finally, about halfway through my senior year, you know, he came over and was like, hey, you want to keep playing baseball? I was like, heck yeah, you know, because I didn't really know what I was going to do. I've thought about, you know, joining the military. I thought about, you know, joining the Air Force or doing so. I knew I didn't want to stay in Phoenix City and Salem. And, you know, I worked enough construction jobs with my brothers during the summer that I knew I didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it was like I knew I couldn't afford to go to school, to pay for school. So if I went to school, it had to be with a scholarship. He gave me the opportunity to go to Chattahoochee Valley. And, you know, my first year there, I realized that, okay, I'm just as good as a lot of these guys on this field. I think I can do this. And then during my freshman year, things kind of started really going the right direction. I started pitching a lot more. I really started, you know, taking to pitching, being able to, because growing up, I always had a really good arm, but I was wild as all get out. I'd either walk you or hit you, honestly.
That lasted a while.
Yeah, it took a while. So growing up, all the coaches that I ever played for, they were scared to death to put me on the mound because of that. But once I started doing it more and started figuring I was a good enough athlete that I could, it started really going the right direction for me. And then, you know, there was a scout in Columbus that had told Coach Baird about me, mm-hmm. a local scout. And that was how I started getting recruited by Auburn, was a local scout. You know, he's really undersized. You need to get on him because a lot of teams are going to start recruiting him after his freshman year. And that was when he brought me up here on a recruiting trip, and I was like, heck yeah, man, this was like the big leagues to me, you know, pitching, you know, coming to Auburn and having a chance to play in the SEC. Because at the time I was getting recruited by a lot of smaller schools, you know, Columbus College, South Alabama. Auburn was the first really, really big baseball school to recruit me, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is kind of crazy, you know. And then, you know, so it didn't take long for me to get up here, see the campus, and fall in love with it.
All right, I want you to confirm a story that I've heard about you in high school while you were at Glenwood, a Glenwood Gator.
Okay.
Uh-oh. The story goes, you guys were facing Lee Scott. I think it was a playoff game. You were pitching.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was your junior or senior year. You hit the first batter and then sat down everybody else in order the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. I think it is. I can't remember I don't know if I got everybody out, but it was.
That's the story I've heard.
Yeah.
That's the legend.
Yeah, it was.
I just go with that.
Yeah, I think
just
so.
Claim it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was exactly how it
video,
went.
So
yeah, the guy made me mad. He looked at me wrong in the on deck circle, and I was like, take that, and I'm going to no hit everybody. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it was, I'll tell you what, Glenn, we had a really, really good, they still have a really good baseball program over there. Tim Fanny's done an unbelievable job over there, but we were really good back then too. I mean, we had some guys that could really, really play. And Lee Scott was a huge rival, still are a big rival of, you know, they always played kind of second fiddle to us at Glenwood on the baseball field and still do for the most part. It was fun. It was a good moment. You know, anytime you can, you know, have a good team game against one of your big rivals, you know, it's always something to be proud of.
All right. You come to Auburn, and that freshman year starts with, I mean, you're like the national player the week after your first weekend.
Yeah.
But that's not one of Auburn's better teams that your junior year. Now, you're pitching pretty well by the end of the year, but that's a team that doesn't even make the SEC tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? It was, you know, when I signed and committed and signed with Auburn, it was after I watched the 95 team, which was number one in the country. They were one of the best baseball teams I'd ever seen. And then I come to campus in 96 thinking, okay, we're about to just pick it up. And, you know, it was a combination of, I think, a lot of new players coming into the team. I think maybe some leadership with some of our upperclassmen probably wasn't what we needed to be at the time. I was trying to figure out if I was good enough to play here or not. And Coach Bear brought me over to play center field, to hit and to pitch. And I was kind of feeling my way around both. I mean, I went from a small junior college to all of a sudden now the SEC and playing against some of the best players in the country on a weekend and week out basis. And I didn't do either one very well at the beginning. I did have a good first weekend. I think it was against VMI hitting. You know, and I think at the time, I think their mind, Coach Barron and Coach Renfro, they didn't see me as a middle of the order type of hitter. Because like I said, I was 150 pounds by then. I didn't look like a middle of the order guy that was going to bang the ball around. I was pretty frail looking. You know, so they saw me as a top of the order guy.
That's what we like to call petite.
Kind of a bunter, hit and run type of guy, or maybe the bottom of the order guy, but pitch. And me, I had never been that kind of hitter. I was always the guy that was like, give me the bat, I'm going to try to hit it as far as I can. And that was, I couldn't hit the ball the other way. It probably drove Coach Renfro crazy because I couldn't stay inside the ball and try to hit it to right field. I was let me see how far over the monster I can hit it. And it kind of probably drove him nuts, you know, and that wasn't the kind of hitter I was. And it took, halfway through that year, things were going so badly on both sides that Coach Baird was like, hey, why don't we just kind of shelve hitting, shelve playing the outfield. We really need you on the mound to pitch, and we want you to figure that out. And I was like, perfect. Let's do it. So he and I started working together a lot. And I'm wanting to say this was halfway through the year and the SEC was starting to kick up. And I remember kind of my coming out party from that moment on was Arkansas opened up their new stadium at Arkansas. And I think we might have been one of their first SEC games there. And I came out of the bullpen and threw about four or five innings out of the bullpen and really started figuring things out and had a good game. From that point on, you know, I was plugged in. And around that time, Ryan Halla hurt his arm. He hurt himself on a Friday night, and I kind of got plugged into his spot in the rotation. And once that happened, I really finished the season believing that I could be really good in this league,
and
that's
you,
what started.
Coach Baird, I mean, I feel like he single-handedly really turned Tim around. I mean, his whole trajectory of his career around. I mean, he really, sure. And we're still, I mean, we were texting this morning. We love that. We love them so much. And he, and we always both say, you know, he really just invested in Tim, and he taught him how to pitch. Yeah, I mean, yeah. He changed what.
It made a few adjustments with my delivery, and I got to where I could command the ball a lot better than I did, because that was the thing. It was never did I have good stuff or did I not have good stuff. That was always there, but it was like, can I command it? It was the problem I had my whole life. You know, how wild is he going to be? You know, a few adjustments that he made with me in my delivery. I mean, I was just able to really command the ball wherever I wanted, and that kind of took me, that skyrocketed my success on the mound. You know, going into my senior year, it's like, okay, I knew I was going to have a rotation spot going into my senior year.
You're the Friday guy. You're going into your senior year.
Yeah, yeah. And at the time, I'm not sure where the outfield thing came back into play. I think maybe we had a couple of guys that we were recruited and committed to that maybe didn't get to campus. But to make a long story short, we were an outfielder short coming into our senior year. And Coach Baird was like, hey, you know, I think we're going to give you an opportunity to play the outfield again, along with pitching on Friday nights. You know, was that something you're interested in? And I was like, heck yeah, you know. And but in my mind, I'm like, okay, this isn't going to affect me from a pitching standpoint. I'm going to make sure that the pitching is that's my thing. And I want to see if I can hit at this level. And I won't ever forget, I played in a Sunday men's league that summer in Montgomery. And it was like the Montgomery Rebels was the team that I played on that Sunday, on those Sundays. And it was, and I went up there and every Sunday and was playing and hitting, and I was facing pitching that was like 83 to 86 miles an hour. And so it was kind of one of those things that kind of gave me some confidence. And man, came into my senior year in the fall, just felt like I could hit again. And they plugged me into the middle of the order. They didn't put me in the one and two holes, you know, for me to bunt and hit and run. And they said, just get in there and hit and see what you can do. And once they kind of took the reins off of me and said, hey, just do it, it really started taking off for me on the mound and at the plate. You know, a lot of people think that I was a really, really good hitter. I really was a good hitter for 1 year.
Pretty good year, though.
At Auburn. It was, you know, I figured some things out. It was a fun year for us. And we went from having probably one of the worst baseball teams that Auburn University probably has ever fielded to one of the better ones the next season. And so it can happen that quick.
All right, two things about that final season. And I guess this is actually even before it. Learned the splitter from Hal Baird. How much of that was part of your arsenal?
No, it was a huge, I mean, that was my swing and miss pitch. That was what got me, that was my identity on the mound, was sinker and a split off of that pitch. You know, I kind of messed with a split finger before I got to Auburn, but Coach Baird he really nailed it in for me. You know, John Powell was one of his guys before I got here, and he had one of the best split fingers in the country. And he just shared with me what he had done with John and those little adjustments. You know, after I had started pitching and pitching every Friday and starting to really get in that rhythm my junior year, you know, that was when things really started coming along with the adjustments that Hal and I had made on the mound and in our bullpens. And, you know, it was one of those things where that split finger off of that sinker was a pitch that was my identity. And then, you know, then I would drop down and throw like a sidearm sinker and a sidearm breaking ball off of that, you know. And so it was one of those things where I would kind of move my arm slot around a little bit when I was in college. But even after I left Auburn, when I got to pro ball, it was, hey, you're a sinker split guy. That was when I got to the big leagues. Pretty much, I was a two pitch pitcher. It was my sinker and my split, and I had a little bitty rinky dink breaking ball that I would throw off of it. It was two big league pitches almost from the beginning, almost from the time that when I was working with Hal when I was here at Auburn. And I knew that it was a good pitch, but I really didn't know how good it was until I had gotten to the big leagues and I'm facing some of the best hitters in the world and making them look like the college hitters that I had faced. So. Yeah.
It's a great day to get vaccinated. Many children and adults that delayed vaccination during the pandemic are still behind schedule. It is crucial that we take the steps to get everyone back on track with their routine immunizations. Children and teens can still catch up on their vaccinations even if they start late. Make sure you and your family are up to date on all recommended vaccines, including respiratory virus vaccines. Let's all do our part to get back on track. Don't wait. Vaccinate. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM.
I tell this story to every class that I speak to at Auburn, because they ask me, what's a great moment in your broadcasting career? And the first one I talk about is Tallahassee. Rod and I in the booth, and it's a Saturday game. It's not Sunday, it's Saturday. Both Auburn and Florida State are undefeated. As good a Florida State team as they've had. Mm-hmm. I mean, J.D. Drew and that group. And Auburn's the home team. Auburn had flipped a coin, won the flip, coin flip. There's already lost Casey Dunn to an injured hand. Yeah. So David Ross, who grew up there and played ball just beyond the right field or left field wall. Mom worked in the Florida State Athletic Department. I mean, it's a great story.
Yeah.
You're on second base in that ninth inning.
Mm-hmm. It's the highest I've ever seen him jump ever.
You'd walk, right?
Yeah, I had walked. Yeah, I'd walked. Thank God I walked, because I was really struggling at the plate at the time.
And Derek Reif gets an infield single.
Yeah.
So it's first and second. Jamie Kirsch is already homered in this inning.
Mm-hmm.
Shows you how far behind Auburn was going into that ninth inning.
Yeah.
Josh Etheridge strikes out, and here comes David Ross. We all knew how well David was behind the plate.
Yeah.
Outstanding. But he's hardly played. He comes up. Two outs in the bottom of the ninth. Auburn trails by two.
Yeah.
I know from my perspective. I want to hear from your perspective.
Yeah. You know, it was, you know, like you said, you know, Josh was one of our, Etheridge was one of our big sticks in the lineup. So when he...
By the time he left, he's the all-time home run leader.
When he went down, I was like, oh, man, you know, that was one of our big guys that you know, we don't have him now. And then we got Rossi coming up. And, you know, he was... There wasn't anybody better than David behind the plate, catching and throwing and calling a game. At the time, offensively, though, he had some work to go. I mean, he hit like a freshman or a younger guy. You know, it was one of those things where I was just like, man, you know, this thing's lining up to be something really special. I remember sitting at second base, and it was like I was watching it on the TV, because I got the whole stadium in front of me. You know, I got the catcher, the hitter, the pitcher. It was like I was sitting in my living room watching this game. Hearts pounding like... You know, nobody's business. Nobody ever gave us a chance to beat this team from the beginning. You know, they had a buzzsaw of a mm-hmm. team offensively. You know, I can't remember what the count ended up being, 1-2 or 2-2, and I just remember thinking, man, just – and I remember he had some good swings coming, you know, on a couple of pitches. I was just like, man, if he can just run into one, holy cow. And the guy pitching, his name was Randy Niles. He was one of their big relievers.
You're a great slider.
I mean, unbelievable. You know, I just throw him anything but that slider, and I think David had a chance. But
Tim played with Randy. After
I did.
That.
I got drafted with
they
Randy
both,
that year.
Both got drafted by the A's.
Yeah, so
they're on the same.
That's
team.
The only reason I remember that name. Don't think I'm. You know,
I was really impressed.
So, yeah. So I'm sitting there, and David fouls. He takes a swing, and everybody in the stadium
thought
it was strike three.
They're coming out of the dugout.
Yeah, I did for sure.
The catcher, it just did. Fall out of his mitt,
right.
The foul tip, you know, and I almost kind of thought it was it too, and then all of a sudden I had to get back to second base, and I don't know if it was the next pitch or two pitches later.
Right.
Man, I'm talking, it was like he just ran that ball, just had a tracer right to his barrel, and I saw it come out of his hand, and I saw David, he was on time, got his foot down, put the barrel out, and when he hit it,
gone.
I couldn't believe that I was about to witness this. Like, by the time I got to home plate, I mean, I was in tears. I was just like, oh, my God, I never cried on a baseball field in my life, right? So I'm coming around third base, and I'm sitting there screaming, because I knew how important that was for us to win that ball game, because if we didn't win the ball game, I just didn't know if we had enough firepower as a team to be able to win three or four games in a row to win the whole thing. Gosh, I won't ever forget. We get to home plate, and they're just all there waiting on us, and I'm – And the one thing I remember is Coach Baird was like right on the other side of the circle. And I get there and, you know, we're jumping around. He's so excited. Next thing I know, the whole thing, it just gets bum rushed when Rossi comes across. And I remember just thinking, I looked at Coach Baird and he just gets pummeled. I remember his
glasses.
His glasses fell off. And the one thing that I remember is just like, oh, my God, Coach. I remember, like, grabbing his glasses and, like, handing it to, like, man, y'all, we can't hurt this man. You know what I mean?
Those were prescription sunglasses.
Yeah, it was the prescription Oakleys, which was, right. like, might as well have been – it was probably the most expensive thing at the field
right.
at the time. And but it was just so exciting to be able to be a part of such a big moment in Auburn baseball.
When you know David, that it makes it even better, if that's possible. Because he is still one of our very best friends. And he is just salt of the earth. His family, like you said, salt of the earth. And for him to have that personal moment, was just so great.
And aside from how everybody knows David, he was one of the best teammates ever. You know, he came in, we all came to Auburn on the same recruiting trip. Me, David, Casey Dunn, we had a group of about 10 or 12 kids that most of us ended up committing and coming to Auburn from that recruiting trip. And David was one of he was either the number one or the number two recruited catcher in the country. I mean, getting him was like getting Johnny Bench. It was the kind of weight that it was when we committed him and got him to come to Auburn to play. So we assumed that he was going to come in and just play and be All-American catcher every year. Well, you get there, and all of a sudden you have Casey Dunn. Didn't come with a lot of fanfare, but ended up being an unbelievable baseball player for Auburn. So those two guys kind of competed with playing time, you know, their whole time at Auburn. And David was the much better catcher and the much better thrower and much better game caller. But Casey was by far the better hitter.
Right.
He could really hit, really, really hit. And, you know, with Casey.
And both were terrific leaders, too.
Both were awesome. Yeah. Both were awesome. And it just so happened to be that, you know, David just didn't quite hit enough to be able to nail down that starting spot in that catcher's position the whole time he was there. And at that time, and he handled it with such professionalism, you know, not playing every day. Because a lot of kids, you know, if they get recruited by a school and they're not playing from day one, they got their lip poked out and they're just not very good teammates, and they become kind of cancerous on a team. David was he loved being there more than anybody in that locker room. And then he finally had a chance to be able to play due to an injury from Casey. Casey got hit by a pitch and broke his hand or wrist or something. What a moment for him. What a moment for Auburn baseball. And it couldn't have happened for a better guy and during that moment.
And then he became the oldest player to hit a home run in a World Series.
Yeah, he moves on, finishes his career at Florida, and wins two World Series.
Well, that'll tell you what kind of guy he was, that Coach Baird thought so much of David that he knew that Casey was going to come in and play the next year. And he didn't want to hold David back. He said, hey, you know what, I like you. I care about you too much, your career. I'm going to give you your release and let you go play and just – get drafted, go somewhere 1 year, get drafted, and have a heck of a professional career.
And he did.
And he did. And he goes to Florida and goes to the World Series with Florida the next year.
Sure does. Mm-hmm. All right. When are you starting to think pro ball, Tim? We've gone from Glenwood to Chatt Valley. I could play college ball now.
Yeah.
And then that senior year, you're the SEC Player of the Year. You're the national, one of the three national players of the year. So, I mean, it just explodes for you. So when are you starting to think pro ball?
Well, you know, during my senior year, I think it started really becoming a reality. You know, I think I had a small opportunity to get drafted after my junior year, but it would have been a late draft pick, and it was something that, you know, I just felt like I needed one more year at Auburn and you know, get closer to my degree and, you know, keep getting better. I felt like I still had a ways to go. And thank God, because it was one of my favorite years in all of in my life, really, my baseball especially.
Me too.
You know, in that 97 season. Yeah. But the question going, my senior year, you know, I was able to swing the bat so well that a lot of teams were kind of interested in me being a hitter, and some of them were interested as a pitcher. And I knew in my mind, in my heart, that if I was going to play at the next level, it was definitely going to be on the mound and not at the plate. You know, I just didn't have the strength and the build to be a position player. I just felt like, so I think during my senior year, I was able to really think that, okay, I think I can do this at the next level. You know, I was told going into towards the draft that I was going to be probably anywhere from the 8th to the 12th round draft pick. You know, they can get kind of narrow down a window for you where they think you may get drafted. So that was what I was thinking. And if you remember, you know, the draft happens during the World Series
back then.
So it happens while you're playing out there.
And I think
right before the World Series.
We were in Omaha during it. We were in Omaha. And I remember, you know, we had some guys on our team, pitchers, that were pretty highly regarded in the professional. You know, Brian Hepson was a guy that was going to go pretty high. Patrick Dunham was a guy that was going to go pretty high. So they were, but you know, they were, they looked like big league pitchers though. They were 6'5", 6'6", big. I was 6 foot, 155 pounds. You know, I didn't scream, hey, I'm going to win 20 games or pitch 17 years in the big league. So, and I got it. You know, I didn't, you know, I love that they were going to have a chance to get drafted higher than me, even though at the time, you know, my stats were probably better than them. And, but I didn't, you know, for me, I just wanted a chance. I wanted an opportunity to play pro ball. And, you know, luckily John Poloni, the scout for the Oakland A's, was a guy who scouted the Auburn team for 2 years. And he really liked me from the time of my first year at Auburn. During the draft, he'll tell me the story. He said during the draft, they were in the draft room, and he was fighting for me to, for them to draft me before the 8th, 9th, 10th, 12th round because he thought that, you know, I was a better pitcher than that. And about the 6th, 5th, 6th round comes around, and he's talking to Billy, hey, you know, there's this guy in Auburn, you know, SEC Player of the Year pitcher. We got to get this guy, you know. And the one thing that Billy, he said, wait a minute. He said, you telling me the SEC Player of the Year, All-American, is still on the board in the 6th round? And he said, yeah. He said, so Billy drafted me. He said, obviously we loved you as a pitcher. You know, everybody was saying that you were probably going to go later just because of your size. He said, but, you know, we love the fact that you were able to do both, that you were an athlete. He said, you're an SEC Player of the Year, and you pitched and you hit and you did this and that. And he said, I was kind of amazed that you were still on the board. So, you know, we took you in the 6th round, you know, of that draft. And, you know, I will say this, it was, you know, Oakland that year, you know, their pitching was pretty bad at the big league level. And Billy was trying to turn that organization around and he understood that, hey, you needed to be strong up the middle, especially on the mound. And I think 8 or 9 out of the first 10 or 12 picks of our draft that year were college juniors or seniors pitchers.
Who else besides yourself?
There was a guy named our first round pick was Chris Enox out of West Virginia, and then Eric DeBose was our second round pick, who was a stud. There's a guy named Chad Harville, a reliever from Memphis. He's about 5'8", but threw 100 miles an hour. So, you know, he drafted all the best college arms at that time that he could. He said, because he said, and he looked at our draft. I remember we were sitting there and he's talking all. He goes, I don't know if y'all have looked, but our big league pitching stinks. He said, and you look around, there's a reason why we drafted all of y'all college pitchers. He said, I don't care what round we drafted you in or how much money we have invested in you. He said, if you show us that you can pitch, we're going to move you up. And I was like, man, that's all I needed because, you know, I was a 6th-round pick. They invested like $20,000 in me. I mean, they didn't have any money invested in me. I was a senior. I came out as a senior, so it's not like I had a lot of leverage to negotiate with. But that was all I needed to know was, you know, do I have to perform twice as good as the guy you just gave $1 million to? And he said, you show us that you can pitch. It's a blank slate. He said, I know we got money invested in people, but... And that was all I needed to know. And
white cleats. He was super excited that he got to wear white cleats. That was the thing in Oakland, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, it was interesting. But, you know, true to his word, though, it was, you know, you go out there and you perform, and he moved you up. And that organization, it was a perfect environment for me because they didn't have money to go out and invest in free agents. You know, they had to develop within the organization. I had a chance to work with Rick Peterson. Rick Peterson ended up being my big league pitching coach, but at the time he was our minor league pitching coordinator. So he worked with us first hands-on right from the beginning of that draft. You know, he knew what we could do and what we all had, and then at the time, a year later, he's the big league pitching coach. So he was in the trenches and dug in with all of us, so he knew what we were made of. And, you know, I don't think it was a coincidence that I was called up a year or so later.
When do you go to law school?
He got drafted in June of 97, and I started in August of 97.
Okay.
So,
but you guys are together at this point.
Yeah. And then first time I went to visit him, he started in Medford, Oregon. So I went out on a weekend. I didn't think I had much time. I had to study. So I went out one weekend, and he proposed. So we got engaged pretty quickly, like right after he got drafted, because we knew we were across the country from each other, and we didn't really know when we'd get married, but I think it was just kind of just felt better about being engaged. So, So, but it was wonderful timing, because he was 100% focused on what he was starting, and I was the exact same way. So we just kind of, we were together, but we were able, being separate physically, we could each concentrate and give enough time to what we were doing. So
you were married after you got called up, is that right? After your first year of pro ball?
Yeah,
that or first year of majors.
Yeah, we got engaged in, was it the summer of 98?
'97.
I got called up in June of 99. So we got engaged at my short season, and then the next year I was in single A and double A the whole year. And then the following year I started in double A again in 99, started in double A, went to triple A, and then got to the big league. So it was
he was called up in June of 99, and we got married in October.
Yeah.
Which the wedding date was kind of based around my law school schedule and the minor league baseball schedule. So when he got called up to the big leagues, it was kind of nerve-wracking, because that could still be the big league playoffs. Minor league baseball gets done a month earlier.
Yeah.
So it was a little dicey for a second.
I wasn't anticipating getting called up in 99, because, you know, looking at our team, you know, I just felt like there was maybe two or three guys ahead of me in the pecking order to get called up to the big leagues on that. That was on that AAA team. You know, you got to remember too, the A's hadn't been to the playoffs in God knows how many years at that time. So I was like, the chances of us getting to the playoffs are, there's a chance, but let's be honest here, you know. And then, but you know what? The next season in 2000, I mean, we made the playoffs for the first time in forever in Oakland. It was some good drafting on their part and some good, you know, their willingness to call up a bunch of young players in that organization was the reason why we had that run of really good teams in Oakland.
It's a great day to get vaccinated. Many children and adults that delayed vaccination during the pandemic are still behind schedule. It is crucial that we take the steps to get everyone back on track with their routine immunizations. Children and teens can still catch up on their vaccinations even if they start late. Make sure you and your family are up to date on all recommended vaccines, including respiratory virus vaccines. Let's all do our part to get back on track. Don't wait. Vaccinate. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM.
Both of you, if you would, comment on the Tommy John surgery and the uncertainty at that point. Because, I mean, to that point, I mean, your career is, the trajectory is up. I mean, you've already been in an all-star game at this point. You've been in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You're playing for the team, I'm guessing, that you grew up rooting for as a kid. And then, boom.
Yeah. You know what? There was some uncertainty there. You know, even though there's so much success in the Tommy John surgery, even then, nowadays it's even more so. But you know, there is that chance that, hey, you know what? You may or may not come back from this. You know, and you just got to trust that the doctors do it right, and you know, thank God, you know, hope that the good Lord helps with the healing the way it's supposed to, and the rehab does what it's supposed to, and. And I'm going to be honest with you, I mean, that was really the first big injury and surgery that I'd ever had. I never really had to deal with any other besides little aches and pains, you know. And
I'll say he was, it's frustrating. It's a year, you know, and they say give it a year. And we lived in Peachtree City when we played for Atlanta, and he had to rehab up in Gwinnett. So every day he had to drive from Peachtree City to Gwinnett, which was over an hour.
Yeah, it was an hour and a half.
Yeah. And which that's taxing and draining to know that you have to do that every day and do all your rehab and then come home. We had three small kids, but I'll say this about Tim. He's never been defined by baseball. He's a good guy. And I kept him very busy. I've never been, unless he was pitching, the day he's pitching, I would leave him alone. Like, I'd let him sleep in. But if he wasn't pitching, I'm like, you only work every 5 days. Like, you're a dad every day. So get up. The kid, like, I'm tired. So you go ahead, and the kids are up and they're hungry. So I think that was a blessing too, because it gave him time that he didn't know he was going to have at home. And he would have frustrating days, but he didn't really have any setbacks. And we were in the thick of small children. And so it was. He was really, you know, he got to be hands-on and be at home. And
it was challenging in a lot of ways. I mean, it was, you know, bodies react a little differently to surgeries. And, you know, everybody, at the time, Peter Moylan, who you know, does broadcast work for the Braves now. He and I had Tommy John at the same time. He was probably 3 or 4 months ahead of me in his rehab process. And I remember seeing him and seeing how awesome he felt and how his arm was bouncing back. And he was just talking about, oh, buddy, man, it feels so great. I feel like I could pitch right now. And it'd be like 5 months in. Meanwhile, I'm like still in my brace and like I'm 6 weeks into
and
it.
He's not a good patient either. I remember 3 days after it was done, he had I was there with him. Dr. Andrews, you know, gave us all the rules and he said, don't touch anything for a week, 7 days. Just leave this bandage on. I'm gonna see you in 7 days. Well, I was downstairs and I hear the shower upstairs, which is where all the bedrooms were. I'm like, what is a shower on? So I go up there. He has taken everything off, butt naked, no wrap, no nothing, in the shower. I'm not very sympathetic with things like that. And I said, no, you didn't. I said, if you get gangrene, that's on you. He's like, and he has also cut when he broke his ankle, cut the cast off. I was walking back to our room, and I see the cast laying in there.
I'm like, some strong
as I get
drugs
closer,
after
I'm
surgeries,
like, what
just
is
so you
that?
Know.
And there's the cast cut that he's cut off of his foot. So he's not a real great patient. Yeah, well, he's very impatient, we'll say that. But luckily that didn't, his arm
but
didn't.
You know, but the one thing too, like with the whole process, I mean, I didn't feel like it felt as good as a lot of people that I was seeing with Tommy John's. Right. Like, you know, I'm seeing how these guys are wanting to throw and they're having to, you know, their rehab guys are having to pull the reins back on them. I wasn't that guy. Like, the whole time I'm sitting there thinking, like, good Lord, they want me to do this, and I can't even, you know, like, I just felt like things just didn't feel good with it, the rehab process and how it was bouncing back. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, you know what? This is like 90% success rate. I got the best doctor in the world doing my surgery. The one half a percent of a percent that goes wrong is probably going to be me, you know, just the, But I remember when I actually did start pitching again and doing my rehab starts, and it still didn't feel great like I thought it was going to. You know, I came back and pitched at like 13 months. Like, I was able to come back and pitch and able to have success. But I still, in the back of my mind, I was like, man, it's still really stiff. It still feels weird at night. It feels weird in the mornings. But then, thank God, I was able to when I had my surgery, I only had to come back and pitch in September. So I was activated in like the beginning of September. So I had like 3 or 4 starts to pitch after my rehab assignment. And then I had the whole off season, right? So when I had that whole off season after pitching those 3 or 4 starts, when I came back to spring training, which was about 16 months after surgery, that was what I felt like everybody else was talking about.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's what everybody's, I like it. It felt good. And that was when I felt like, okay, any concern that I had that it wasn't bright was out of my head.
All right, let's fast forward to the World Series with the Giants. Mm. You become as much of a media star.
That's mentally unstable.
Oh, we know that.
I think I still have PTSD from that.
Oh, you do.
What did it mean? What did it mean for you, Tim? I mean, you know this is, your career's, you're about done.
Yeah.
But to get that opportunity to go to that World Series and to get the ring.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you play. If you're fortunate and blessed enough to have a long career, once you get past that part of, man, I want to get to the big leagues and I want to stay in the big leagues, right. Once you get past that, it's like, I want to win a championship. And early on in my career, you know, I was in the playoffs every year in Oakland and early on in Atlanta. And, you know, as a young player, you're like, man, we lost, whatever was next year. Well, you keep saying that. Next thing you know, you're 14 years in and you hadn't gotten past the first round of the playoffs. You know, so there I am, long in the tooth, you know, thinking, okay, how much longer am I going to play this game? I hadn't gotten a championship. So, and then my last year in Atlanta, you know, I break my ankle covering first base and I was 38 years old. I'm sitting there thinking, golly, this is going to be it. You know, I'm old and in a walking boot. You know, nobody's going to give me a chance to play, you know, again. You know, who would give me a chance?
I wish the Cardinals had.
But you know what? It was what a blessing, though, because nobody would have ever dreamt that I would have ever left Atlanta. I didn't think I was going to leave Atlanta. You know, I thought it was either me end my career there or, you know, them offer me a contract and me stay there or call it a day. You know, I never thought that other teams would be interested in a 38-year-old fresh off of a blown-out ankle, right? The day I hit free agency, the Giants were the first team to call me. And
with an unbelievable offer that we thought our agent had misheard what they said. It's like, what?
But it was funny, regardless of that. I mean, I was sitting there thinking, man, there was like 10 or 12 teams calling me. And I was like, man, I can't believe this many people are like, y'all know I'm old and I walk around like Fred Sanford right now. Like, you sure? But you know what? But when it came down to it, you know, once all these teams got our medicals and my agent was like telling these teams, hey, you know, we want 3 years. And I'm like, 3 years? Have you lost your mind? Like, I just want one, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe mm-hmm. two. So it was one of those things where, like, when it came down to it and all the teams saw the medical reports and my folder was about that thick of all the medicals of a 40-year-old. And there was really about three or four teams that was really interested. One was obviously San Francisco. One was Oakland.
They came in towards the end.
They were wanting me to come back. Cleveland and Kansas City. And Cleveland, you know, Terry Francona was the manager there, and right. he was our bench coach in Oakland. So he was like, honey, he goes, man, he goes. And it probably would have been Cleveland if they would have been wanting to do 2 years. But he's like, honey, he goes, man. He goes, we feel really good about 1 year with you. He said, we'll overpay you for 1 year. He said, but our guys and our doctors, they just, you know, they saw your medicals and they're just not comfortable with 2 years. And I was like, I get it. I wouldn't either. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be. And I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not comfortable with 2 years either, but this is what my agent wants me to do. Right. So ended up going to San Francisco, and I won't ever forget this part. This was kind of funny. We'd go out there for a physical, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go out there and get my physical done. They said, you know, at the time I just... You broke my ankle. They're like, hey, we want to just check out your ankle real good. And I was like, all right. So I go out there, and I'm out there doing my physicals, and I remember calling Kim, and I said, Kim, I said, I don't know if this is going to work out or not. She's like, what are you talking about? I said, man, you know, I told you I was coming out here to get my ankle checked out. I said, man, they're giving me MRIs on my shoulder, MRIs on my elbow, my back, because, you know, I've had elbow surgery, back surgery, ankle surgery. I said, hey, no way I'm going to pass this physical mm-hmm. with these guys. And so I won't ever forget, it was me, our trainer, Dave Gresham, and our team doctor, Dr. Akazuki. We're in Dr. Akazuki's office, and it pretty much they told him, that, hey, you know, this is your call, doc. If you think he can go, it's your call. He comes in here, and I'd never met him before in my life. I love him.
I do, to this day. He's awesome. Caden's spring training right off the bat.
So he comes in there, and I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this ain't going to work, you know. And he's a hoodie. He goes, I'm going to be honest with you. He goes, we were hoping that this file would look a little better than it does. And he said, but I think I'm going to sign off on you for 2 years. And I was like, what? Really? He goes, yeah. He goes, I really think that, he goes, 1 year will be no problem, he said, but I think 2 years, I would be comfortable with 2 years. And turns out he was a huge Oakland fan back in the day. Mm. He was a big Oakland fan,
sweet.
Giants fan now, and you know, fast forward to the next year, we're playing in the World Series.
Let me say this, for someone that has been there, at least from your college career on, we all knew you were a competitor.
Yeah.
I knew if they give you the chance,
yeah,
you're going to come through.
Yeah,
all you had to do is look into your eyes.
Yeah,
because we knew it here at all.
We've never been out of the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah,
we've been to the playoffs several times, never been out of the first round. So he and I have both said before, winning that the NLCS to go to the World Series, I felt like was more emotional and than even winning the World Series, because you're like.
Yeah.
It is emotional. You're like, oh my gosh, this is year number 15.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of really neat things, and we don't need to get into it, but just Tess had epilepsy. She was diagnosed with epilepsy as a child, and we were getting treatment in Birmingham and then Atlanta, and we met a doctor in San Francisco first week we were out there that just changed the whole trajectory of her treatment, and she's been perfectly fine since we went out there. Yeah. And then Tim won a World Series, you know, and so it's just, it was such a blessing.
God had his hand on it in a lot of different ways. And
all right.
Yeah.
We could do this for a long, long time, but we don't have the time. Your decision to come back to Auburn for your home.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you guys talk about that?
About 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We were sitting in a sports bar in spring training, and we had Kennedy, and I was pregnant with Tess, and we really were talking about, we lived in South Florida for a few off seasons because we could, the kids weren't, we didn't have any kids in school. We wanted to be somewhere warm or we could have a boat and do things outside. So we did that. And then it came time where we knew we had to make like a adult decision about where are we going to live, you know, forever, which that's a stupid word in baseball, but best we know now, where do you want to live? And we did, we had a conversation for about 5 minutes.
But you could have lived anywhere.
Sure. And that's when there are places we really liked. We really both liked Northern California. Both of the girls were born there. It's beautiful. We really liked Phoenix, Scottsdale. We had spring training there. But the conversation just went, all of our families on the East Coast, we have children, you know, what's the best place for our kids? And it was just a no-brainer. We want to raise our kids in Auburn.
Well, we knew that we'd always come back to Auburn for football games in the fall anyways. It's like, you know, we're probably going to go back there 2 or 3 weekends during the fall anyways, you know, for football games. It just, you know, it didn't make sense to be out west. And then all of our family's here. Right. We wanted to be back here for football weekends, you know, and it just, it was a pretty easy decision. And then once we did decide to make Auburn our home, we were here, you know, looking at some properties.
Oh, this is a cool story. I don't know if you've heard this.
And looking at some, you know, trying to figure out what we were going to do. So
this was winter of 2004.
It's the off season before I got traded to Atlanta. So we were standing pretty much where our swimming pool is right now, where we live. Standing there looking at this lot when Billy Bean called me and told me I got traded to Atlanta. Hmm. So I'm standing there, and I knew I was going to get traded, and I just didn't know when or where. And I looked at the phone, it was Billy calling, and I showed Kim. I was like, oh, God, this is it. You know, and then he's like, hey, Huddy, you know, we hate to do it, but we got to trade you. And he goes, we're going to trade you to Atlanta. And I was just like, what? You know, I was like, how do you sound mad, upset, but not really? You know, and that was kind of how all that played out. And
that's where we live now.
Yeah.
All right. This is a big week for the Hudson Family Foundation because this week is the culmination of legends.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring in kids from all over Lee County to Neville Arena. They come in on their school buses, and the band is there, and the cheerleaders are there, and coaches are there, Aubie's there, and they're getting glad hands as they come in. I've been fortunate enough to be a part of this event.
Mm-hmm.
Rod did it first. Mm-hmm. And of course, when he passed away, then I came in.
Mm-hmm.
And to look into these kids' eyes, because everybody gets a high five,
right,
or the opportunity,
right,
for a high five as they come in. Every one of these children, mm-hmm, all over the county.
1,200-ish.
And there are kids of all races, nationalities that are there,
mm-hmm,
that day. And to look into their eyes sometimes, it's a touching.
Yes.
To me, that's the most touching part of that day.
I agree. And it's, you know, the program started because, like I was saying earlier, we're always revisiting and making sure, is what we're doing still relevant, or is there something that we need to address that we're not addressing? And food insecurity is a very big problem in Lee County. So to address that, we started a program a few years ago called the Legends Program, where we partner with, and I can't say this enough, Auburn City Schools, Opelika City Schools, and Lee County Schools. We couldn't do this without them because they handpick the children in their elementary schools who have food insecurity. And not only that, but sometimes they'll choose kids who just are having a tough time, and they just need a pick-me-up, and they need some support. And so they handpick these kids from their schools.
Okay.
And then they get a certificate that says they're a legend. L stands for something, E stands for something. And basically they're told, you're a legend in your school. You've worked hard in school. You're kind to your classmates. You're a great son or daughter at home. And because of that, we're going to recognize you and give you a $100 gift card to buy Thanksgiving for your family.
Right.
So 1,200 of these kids get that encouragement. And it's become not just about food insecurity, but about encouraging and lifting up the kids as well. And so that day it's so fun to see. And when we were talking about Tim not being on campus, I think another big part of it is we do a video where we get Auburn student athletes. And at first we had Coach Dye, and we had Bo Jackson. We had people that we would look up to and want to hear from speaking to these kids on a video. those kids don't know who that is. Who are these old people on the video? So we speak with or get to or record Auburn student athletes who are somewhat local. So from LaGrange, from Auburn, from Opelika, from Columbus, and their message is, we were where you are. I went to a Westmith Station Elementary School, and I want those kids to know this. There's no reason that this could not be you. You know, there's, you're not precluded from any of this. And we want them to see Auburn's campus. We want to know how, we want them to know how close it is. We want them to know the opportunities here. And we want them to connect with, hopefully connect with one of these student athletes that they hear to say, look, if that person can do it, I can do it too. Yeah. And then also to be proud that they're able to take home a gift card and go shop with their a family member and provide a Thanksgiving meal for their family.
Yeah, I was one of those kids. You know, if you know, growing up, I mean, I would have been on one of those buses coming over, you know, and you know, and the fact that they're able to come here and see the campus and see what it's all about. It took me until, you know, after I was getting recruited by Auburn to figure out where Auburn was on the map and see what the campus looked like. So these kids are getting a quick look at what a possibility is for them one day.
And I don't fault any families. I think a lot of times, especially with how expensive groceries are and everything, some families are on autopilot, meaning meeting these basic needs and going to work every day and getting their kids to school every day. And I just feel like God has blessed us so much. It's our responsibility to step in and do the extra and bless these kids with the hopes that it's going to build up their self-esteem and their identity and what matters, and just give them that, just let them know that they're special regardless of any circumstances.
And it'll make a difference with these kids, and you can just tell the confidence that they'll walk away with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For someone, maybe they're hearing about the Hudson Family Foundation for the first time today. They'd like more information. Maybe they'd like to get involved with what the Hudson Family Foundation is about.
We would love that.
What's the best way to do that, Kim?
Our website. Our website is hudsonfamilyfoundation.org or .com, either one. We list our programs. We have very specific programs that
because
we
it's
implement.
Not just at the holidays. I mean, that's...
Right.
That's what we're about to get into.
Sure. So we have our individual grant program that's always available that is referral based. And if somebody needs help that you know, qualifies through very, you know, we want to help who needs help and we're going to do it. So there's a very easy process. But then our scholarship program for high school seniors in the spring, and then our Christmas program. And we just have relevant, intentional programs where we can plug in to our local community.
Thank you both for being here today, Juan, and the work that you do.
Well, thank you for helping us. You're the MC. It makes it great.
It's my pleasure. Guys, have a great day. War Eagle.
War Eagle.
Thank you. War Eagle.
For Kim and Tim Hudson and the Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.